morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, May 18, 2020. Many people are killed in intercommunal clashes in Jungle Estate.
In these two locations, the Murley armed youth breached and burned villages in Urol, but the attackers were repulsed with serious loss inflicted on them.
And the religious leader is asking the government to allow churches to function on Sundays.
The government could have thought it wise to open the churches first, because we know that the churches will have order. The churches will pray to God so that He take away this from us.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Unknown number of people were killed and others wounded in intercommunal clashes in Jungle Estate over the weekend. Eyewitnesses say armed youth suspected to be from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area carried out the attacks in four separate villages on Saturday and Sunday. Residents of the area say local leaders are still collecting bodies. Voice of America could not independently verify or confirm the number of people killed in these clashes. For VOA News, Lasuba Memo reports from Juba.
Palmy, former Deputy Secretary General in the now defunct PSA, told South Sudan in Focus that armed youth from Pibor dressed in military uniform raided several villages and burned two Urol County villages, Pieri and Palmy, to the ground.
In these two locations, the Murley armed youth breached and burned villages in Urol, but the attackers were repulsed with serious loss inflicted on them in both locations.
Mai describes the attack as one of the most deadly in recent years. He says the death toll could exceed 200. Mai says some villagers received word that armed youth were mobilizing before the villages were destroyed.
It was a surprise attack, but prior to the launch of the attack in two locations, we received information that Murley youth were mobilized in large numbers and moved out from their areas before the actual attack took place, so we were very aware.
Corbiel Rom, chairperson of the Urol Youth Association, says he took part in the fighting in a bid to defend his community against the attackers.
You fought for 3 hours.
We fought for 3 hours and then they defeated us. Next we repulsed them back. I took arms to defend the people because they came in two ways. Some of them went to the side of Urol. They attacked the area of Pamai, Panyo, and Ulwet, where they killed people and took cattle.
Mai says he believes the attackers wanted to raid cattle and abduct women and children. Several attempts to contact Peter Lebelek, the former Secretary General of the former Boma State, and John Kaka, former Information Minister of the now defunct Boma State, were unreachable due to the poor phone network in the area. Ajak Ligo, the Greater Pibor Administrative Area Coordinator in Juba, says he is yet to receive any details of what happened in Pibor because the area has been cut off from communication, but says he heard rumors last weekend's deadly violence.
I did not know it actually. I can tell you the truth. If the rumors happened as a true that the youth of Murley have gone to attack the Luo Nuer area, my message to them both sides, the fighting cannot help each other.
Ligo is calling on leaders of both communities to convene a meeting to talk about what happened and discuss what can be done to avoid future revenge attacks in the area. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
South Sudanese activists have criticized President Salva Kiir's decision to reconstitute the high-level task force for COVID-19. The activists say the new team is dominated by government officials. The civil society leaders say the government needs to include more technical personnel in the task force to ensure decisions made are based on expert advice. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
President Kerry constituted the task force last Friday in an order read on state television. The task force is now headed by South Sudan Vice President in charge of the service cluster, Hassan Abdelbaghi. Previous one was headed by President Kiir and deputized by First Vice President Riek Machar. The new team is comprised of 14 members, but mainly dominated by undersecretaries and officials of various ministries, including Health Minister Elizabeth Achueyor and Health Ministry Undersecretary Makur Matur Koryom. Jame David Kolok, Executive Director for the local NGO Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, says the new team should include more people with medical expertise.
In terms of the new guys, we are not yet confident whether they are able to actually deliver on the mandate required of them in trying to address this invisible enemy. The reason is that when you look at most of those guys, they are full of undersecretaries who are only technocrats in their own ministries, and their knowledge may not necessarily be broader enough to be able to address the issues of COVID-19.
Rach Malwal, Executive Director of the Civil Society Organization Screen of Rights, agrees.
We look at the new task force as shallow, simply because there are no experts, health experts that are on it. We only have the Undersecretary of Health, who is a doctor by profession, and him alone is not enough. So I suggest a team of experts should be added to the task force.
Malwal says the change should draw a clear line of distinction in the way Kiir and Machar exercise their supervisory roles with the new team. David says he expected the new team to be dominated by healthy professionals, including members of the South Sudan Doctors Union. He says COVID-19 is a healthy emergency requiring leadership from healthy experts.
Otherwise, if they think that the issue of COVID-19 will be politically led, I think that is wrong, and likely South Sudan is going to face an extremely very, very big challenge.
David says the new team should address the challenges posed by easing some of the restrictions aimed at preventing the spread of COVID-19, including reopening bus markets and the resumption of regional flights. The team is also expected to address the challenge of the country's limited testing capacity and to ensure that there are medical teams at the state level to handle the COVID-19 pandemic.
Now we want to see immediate action in terms of evaluating that position and making sure that any decisions that is deemed to be threatening the situation of COVID-19 must immediately be reversed.
David says there is a huge vacuum in the states to create awareness about COVID-19 because state governments have yet to be established. As of Sunday, South Sudan had registered 290 cases of COVID-19, including 4 deaths and 4 recoveries. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A church leader in Western Equatorial State is calling on the government to reopen churches. The government banned religious gatherings in late March to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. A bishop in Yambio says churches could educate South Sudanese about COVID-19. For VOA News, Siba Martin Morangi reports from Juba.
Samuel Enosa Penny, the Archbishop of the Western Equatorial Province of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says churches could play a huge role in creating awareness about COVID-19. Speaking by phone from Yambio, Archbishop Penny says churches are able to reach more people at the grassroots level who do not listen to the radio and have a little access to information about the pandemic.
People are confused. That is the first reaction. You know, they became surprised, they became confused. See, the government could have thought it wise to open the churches first, because we know that the churches will have order. The churches will pray to God so that He take away this from us.
Penny also questions the criteria on which the government based its decisions to relax some COVID-19 restrictions, including reopening bars. He says in bars, patrols often do not remember to practice social distancing, especially when they are drunk, but in church, worshippers would maintain a social distance from each other.
My message could be that let them continue to move towards easing this slowly, because as the number continues to rise every day, and we are not even sure that the people in the state are being tested, the number might be more than what we are told. So let them go slowly in opening up places so that it doesn't burst at a level which will have very bad impact on us.
Modieno Sambaraza, a Christian from Yambio County in Western Equatoria State, says the government should not have allowed bars to reopen because patrols do not observe social distancing.
The increase of the disease among people, especially here in Juba, our government went ahead to open maybe markets and then bars, and then neglecting opening the church, which of course is a place where people can go and refresh the trauma that they are having, and then also hear the word of God, and also at least where they can maintain social distance.
Baraza says the government could use churches as a platform to create awareness about COVID-19. Makur Matur Koriom, a member of the High-Level Task Force for COVID-19 and Undersecretary in the Health Ministry, says the government will wait a bit longer before it considers allowing churches to reopen.
We still believe that it is too early to open up 100%. There were good reasons as to why some activities that have, of economic nature were eased and allowed to open. But of course, that does not necessarily mean that restrictions have been removed completely out of the table, from the table. They are still available. We understand the position of the churches, but it's important that we also consider what a total open up will bring to our people.
Last week, President Salva Kiir said the government may impose a total lockdown if COVID-19 situation worsens in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Seba Martin Rangi from Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN renews mandate of peacekeepers in Abyei.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what would you most likely to accomplish in life, and how close are you to achieving it?
My dream is to be one of the best filmmakers in Uganda and maybe in the world at large. With time and what I've done so far to achieve that, yes, I know I'm still very far, but I've written some scripts already.
To me, as a software developer, I still have a long way, but hopefully, God, I'll be able to make it.
I want to be a voice for the people who I meet and help people generally wherever I find myself. And I think that studying to become a lawyer is in the right direction to achieving that.
I would like to be a very, very great musician, composer. For now, I'm not close there, but I'm working to get to the level I can actually achieve that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
The UN Security Council has extended the mandate of the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei for 6 months. The Council urged Khartoum, Juba and the local communities to take all necessary steps to ensure the area is free from arms. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Meeting by video conference on Thursday, members of the United Nations Security Council voted unanimously to extend the mandate of the UN Interim Security Forces for Abyei for another 6 months until November 14th. The Council reiterated that the Abyei shall be demilitarized from any forces as well as armed elements of the local communities other than UNISFA and the Abyei Police Service. Sudan Transitional Government reiterated its commitment to strengthen cooperation with UNISFA and the government of South Sudan to fully implement provisions outlined in the Abyei Protocol. Ambassador Ilham Shanter, who heads the Sudan's National Committee for Abyei, says Sudanese authorities welcome the renewal of the UNISFA mandate. Speaking in Arabic on Thursday, shortly after a meeting with General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the head of the Sudanese Sovereign Council, Shantar said Sudanese leaders are ready to cooperate with authorities to resolve the dispute over Abyei.
We have discussed a lot of issues related to elevating more cooperation between Sudan and South Sudan, more especially issue of peaceful coexistence in the area. We also discuss on how to strengthen cooperation for the establishment of a joint mechanism between the two countries based on the previous agreement signed by both sides.
Several attacks and counter-attacks have been reported in the Abyei area over the past 3 months. More than 50 people have been killed, including women and children. Both Ngok Dinka and Misiria Arab nomads have exchanged accusations over who is responsible for the violence. Mukhtar Babo Nimir, a paramount chief of the Sudanese Misiria tribe, welcomes the decision. Speaking in Arabic, Nimir says the Misiria have responded in self-defense to attacks carried out by Ngok Dinka, but says he regrets the loss of life on both sides.
Any disagreement that occurs among ourselves, our people will be affected as a result of it. Even if one person is killed, we will be held accountable for it. We are supposed to live together as one people. We have vast land that we can all share. Our ancestors lived together for more than 100 years and they were not even educated. Why can't we live together as one people?
Yusuf Molok, who hails from Ngok Dinka and heads the Abyei Civil Society in Sudan, says he is not optimistic about the performance of UNISFA in the area, judging from the past. Speaking in Arabic, Molok says the UN mission has failed to protect lives and property in the area.
Our opinion is that UNISFA has failed in fulfilling its mandate. And now that this mandate is renewed again, we wonder whether it's the same forces as before or if something has been added to the mandate to protect local civilians. Are they now empowered enough to fulfill their mandate that they have failed to carry out in the past?
By the terms of Resolution 2519-2020, the Council decided to extend the mandate for activities in the area bordering Sudan and South Sudan and reiterated its demand for both countries to provide full support for the mission, including removing any obstacles hindering efforts to protect civilians in Abyei. Kual Alor Kual, head of the Abyei Administrative Area, says extending the mandate will help maintain security in Abyei. Alor says renewing the mandate alone will not solve the dispute over the area. He says what is required is a strong political decision by the government of Sudan and South Sudan to determine the final status of the area.
We urge the two countries to expedite their discussions over the issues of Abyei. So that the issue of VA is resolved or the final status of VA is determined before the end of this mandate. And this is what we really want as the people of VA.
The UN Security Council first authorized the deployment for a peacekeeping force in Abyei in June 2011. Following renewed violence, escalating tensions and population displacement in the area, as Southern Sudan was preparing to formally declare its independence from the Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Kenya has closed its borders with Tanzania and Somalia due to increased number of COVID-19 cases reported at those border points. President Uhuru Kenyatta announced the closure after Kenya's Ministry of Health identified the border areas as COVID-19 high-risk areas following an increase in positive cases. As Moreno Jiambo reports from Nairobi, the Tanzanian government has banned Kenyans transporting essential commodities from accessing the Tanzanian territory.
The Kenya, Tanzania and Somalia borders have been marked as the high-risk areas for the spread of COVID-19 after an analysis by Kenya's Ministry of Health. This has forced Kenya to close the 5 Tanzania and 4 Somalia cross-border points, ordering only cargo trucks carrying essential goods into the country, but under strict measures. In his state of address to the nation, President Uhuru Kenyatta said that Kenya has recorded increased number of imported cases from Tanzania and Somalia, hence need to close the borders.
We have unfortunately witnessed an increased number of imported cases among individuals crossing into the country through our borders, and these new areas have become a matter of grave concern to us. Among the positive cases that have been registered in the country this last week, a total of 43 cases have recently crossed the border from neighboring Somalia and Tanzania.
The cargo drivers who tested positive at the entry points of Kenya, Somalia and Tanzania were denied entry to Kenya. Kenyatta said the closure of the borders of the two countries will help suppress the number of COVID-19 infections in the country.
Be a cessation of movement of persons and any passenger ferrying automobiles and vehicles into and out of the territory of the Republic of Kenya through the Kenya-Tanzania international border, through the Kenya-Somali international border, except for cargo vehicles with effect from midnight tonight, the 16th May 2020.
Tanzania has ignored measures by World Health Organization in curbing COVID-19 as President John Pombe Magufuli refused to attend the East African Heads of State video conference that was meant to help member states put up measures to combat the spread of the virus. Yesterday, Sunday, Tanzania's Kilimanjaro Regional Commissioner Anna Mgwira said that Kenyan drivers transporting essential goods have been banned from Tanzania's territory as most of them were stranded at the border points, saying all goods should be left at the entry point.
A Tanzanian cargo leaving Tanzania to another country should be brought at the border. All payments will be made here at the border and then release the cargo. Goods, especially those from Kenya, will still be traded at the border. However, goods from other countries, but they are coming in through Kenya, the owner will have to look for other alternatives from respective authorities on how their goods will be received.
Yesterday, Sunday, Kenya recorded 57 more COVID-19 positive cases, bringing the total cases to 887, this being the highest number of new cases reported in a day since March 13th, when the country recorded its first COVID-19 case. Reporting for I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The United States is approaching another milestone as the number of COVID-19 deaths approaches 90,000. President Donald Trump unveiled Operation Warp Speed, an initiative aimed at developing a coronavirus vaccine by the end of the year, although he vowed the country could reopen with or without one. This week, the Trump administration also laid out plans to expand an initiative to ensure the United States does not run out of critical medical supplies. White House correspondent Patsy Wedikwasara reports from Washington.
Thank you very much.
U.S. President Donald Trump intends to have hundreds of millions of coronavirus vaccine doses available by January 2021.
It's called Operation Warp Speed. That means big and it means fast.
Most public health experts agree it's an ambitious timeline, but they say it may be possible to have a vaccine ready for emergency use on high-risk groups, such as healthcare workers and the elderly.
Everything would have to go perfectly. I think for the general population, we are really still looking at an 18-month endeavor here, if all goes well.
With an election looming in November, Trump is also keeping his eye on reopening the country and its economy.
Vaccine or no vaccine, we're back. And we're starting the process. And in many cases, they don't have vaccines. And a virus or a flu comes, and you fight through it.
Trump has expressed support for protesters who want individual states to lift stay-at-home orders and open their economies, though many do not meet his own administration's criteria to do so. Some include so-called red states that voted for Trump in 2016. Analysts say Trump's support for protesters may hurt him politically if states that reopen too early see a rise in the number of coronavirus cases.
It is a big risk to take, and what we're seeing now with
cases emerging in rural areas and in places where Trump has been strongest, the red states and the red parts of blue states, suggest that this could be a gambit that could backfire. God bless the
USA. Earlier this week, Trump also announced plans to ensure the nation has enough supply of medical and emergency gear.
Instead of 1 to 3 weeks worth of supplies, which we had less than that, the U.S. government will now stockpile 3 whole months, much of it made in the USA.
The Trump administration has been criticized by some for the country's lack of personal protective equipment in the early weeks of the pandemic. Replenishing the strategic national stockpile is seen as critical.
It's really important that we do everything we can now to prepare for a fall or winter pandemic wave when we will likely have both flu as well as COVID-19 at the same time.
The administration plans to expand American manufacturing of these medical supplies to reduce reliance on foreign companies and create jobs domestically. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
The former Deputy Secretary General Pal Mai of the now-defunct Bia State says more than 200 people were killed and 300 others wounded in intercommunal clashes last weekend. The numbers could not be verified by other sources. Mai says armed youth suspected of being from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area attacked 4 separate villages on Saturday and Sunday. Mai told this program that armed youth wearing military uniforms burned to the ground 2 villages. He says the attackers were repulsed, but not before inflicting serious casualties. South Sudanese activists are criticizing a recent move by President Kiir to reconstitute the COVID-19 high-level task force. They say the new team is dominated by government officials rather than people with medical expertise and can make it harder to control the spread of the pandemic. The new task force is headed by Vice President in charge of the service cluster, Hussein Abdel Baghi, and it has 13 members. James David Kolok, who heads the local NGO Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, says his group is not confident that the new task force can address what he calls the invisible enemy. And finally, the UN Security Council extended the mandate of the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei, or UNISFA, for 6 months. The council urged Khartoum, Juba, and local communities to take all necessary steps to ensure the disputed area is effectively demilitarized and to fully cooperate with UNISFA. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday, when I leave you with the song Into Mwen by the Freedom Boys. Listening to the Freedom Boys with the song Into Mwen. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.